Good morning. You know, I used to belong to the National Storytellers Association. It's kind of like, that's like where I learned to tell stories, watching the masters do it. And I learned something. Every year we used to meet at John Malk's General Store up in the mountains in Tennessee. They've built a convention center where the General Store used to be, where folks used to gather around the potbelly stove to tell these stories. And I learned something. Every story seems to be based on something real that happened. And the story I'm about to tell you is actually based on a true story. It's kind of changed a little with the years, but for the most part, it's right on. And I want to share it with you. Let's just bow our heads for one second. Lord, may the words of my mouth and the meditations of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O Lord, my strength and my redeemer. Amen. French Miller was the best fiddler that ever hit the mountains. I mean, he could play the fiddle better than anybody. And he was so good that he played at church, he played for friends, and he played at socials. And when he played at a social, people would come from hundreds of miles just to hear old French play. He was awesome. When French would play, you couldn't sit still. You just had to tap your feet. You had to clap your hands. You had to do something because his music moved people. In fact, people actually came out and said that they had been there out in the woods with French when he'd play his fiddle and he could actually talk with the birds. I mean, birds would actually stop singing just to listen to French play, and then they kind of talk back to him, and then he'd play again, and it was almost as if he could carry on a conversation with all those little feathery guys up in the trees. It was so tragic when he died. He was a lumberman, and his son Henry was only 14 years old when a tree came back and misdirected and crushed him to death. And boy, he'd been teaching his son how to play that fiddle ever since he was just a little guy. And in fact, they used to play together when he started about 3 or 4 years old. Little Henry get up there with Daddy, and they play the fiddle together, and they do these duets and things. And boy, he just looked up to his dad. He thought his dad was just the greatest thing, and he wanted to be just like his dad. Daddy passed away. And for about 6 months, he wouldn't pick up a fiddle. He was hurting so bad because of what happened to his pop. And then finally, he got invited to play at church, and he didn't want to turn him down. And so he played at church and discovered that actually playing the fiddle gave him more comfort than leaving it alone. So he got right back in the fiddle playing. And he was really good. I mean, some folks said he was as good as his dad. And then there were those guys that just, well, Quentin was a Vietnam War vet, lost a leg. He was always sitting there every day in front of John Malk's General Store. Along with old man Silas, he'd be sitting there whittling away on a piece of wood. Nobody knew what he was making, not even Silas. He just kind of cut away at the end of the day, try to figure out what he'd done. And they would just sit there all day in front of the General Store. But Quentin, he had this thing about getting all over Henry. And I mean, he was all over him. Henry had to pass by every day because every morning, I mean, just a little itty bitty town. And so every morning, all the kids would come walking down the street, down the road in front of John Malk's store. And they'd be heading to the end of town to go to school. And every day when he'd come by, Quentin would let him have it. Quentin would say something like, "Hey, fiddle boy. Hey, I got a deal for you. You give me that fiddle, I'll give you $25 and I'll smash the thing and we'll forget all about it. Because, man, you ain't never going to be as good as your old man." And I mean, Henry would just get livid and he'd get over in his face and say, "What is it with you? Why are you always on my back comparing me with my dad? I don't want to be compared with my dad. I want to be as good as my dad. But I got people like you jumping all over me. It ain't ever going to happen. Just leave me alone, man." He said, "Yeah, well, just put the fiddle down. That's all you got to do. Because if you just stop playing, we'll just forget all about it and people will stop getting on." He said, "It ain't people, Quentin. It's you. You're the one that's always getting on me. And I got to go, man. I'm going to be late for class. So just leave me alone. And he'd go on down to school. He'd be just fuming the whole day over what Quentin would say to him in the morning. And then, of course, he had to walk past the general store to get back home. And he'd be going by and he'd go, "Hey, phony, you, the one with the fiddle case that can't play a lick. Why don't you just bring it over here and we'll set fire to it and we'll just watch it go up together. And then you can stop pretending you know how to play and we'll just let the whole thing slide." And it's Quentin say, "You know, man, I got better things to do with my time than to argue with a moron. Just leave me alone." And he'd just go down the street and get home. This was every day. I mean, every day. Quentin would never let up on him. Every time he had a chance, he would just get on him. Well, one morning as Henry came filing by with all the other kids, Quentin pretended he was real nice. Said, hey, he said, "Henry, come here." He said, "Henry, listen, I know I've been on you and all that about that fiddle." He said, "I'm really trying to do you a favor. I mean, you got to understand that every time you play that thing, people are thinking about your daddy. And the problem is you're not as good as your dad. And so you're desecrating your dad's memory." Oh, that was a low blow, man. I mean, Henry couldn't handle that one. Henry said, "You know, it's one thing to be getting on me. Now you're dragging my daddy back into it. And then you're starting to put words in his mouth. And man, I can't handle that. You just leave me alone, man. I'm telling you, you got to lay up on me. Just lay off of me, man. I can't handle this anymore." And he just started running down the street. Passed by most of his classmates. Was going to turn into the school, but he was still fuming so bad. He just took his fiddle and his books, and he just kept on going up the road. And the road, of course, went up into the hills. And then from the hills, it went up into the mountains. And he started going around and around. He was so angry, he didn't realize what he was doing. Because by the time he stopped, there he was up on the top on Rattlesnake Ridge. His mother told him many times, she said, "Henry, I don't ever want to see you up on Rattlesnake Ridge because they don't call it that for nothing. There's rattlesnakes up there, and I don't want anything to happen to you." Well, he didn't realize what he was doing. When he got up there, he was still so mad. He leaned up against this flat rock and just kind of slid down, boom, landed on his buns and just sat there for a little while daydreaming. And then he said, "You know, if anything I've learned, it's that when I play that fiddle, I feel closer to my dad. I feel something special happening, and I need comfort right now." He said, "I know I should be in school, but I'm not going to do it. I'm just, and he opened up his fiddle case, and he took out his fiddle. And then he rosined up his bow, and he took the fiddle, tucked it under his chin, and he just started playing. And I mean, he went after it. He was just going, humming right along there. And, you know, he was just playing. He had his eyes closed, and he was trying to get lost in his music. And when he opened his eyes, he was absolutely stunned to discover there was a rattlesnake right in front of him, and it was standing up, staring him right in the chops. He stopped playing. He was so shocked. Well, the rattlesnake just kind of went limp, turned around, and went back into a hole. He said to himself, "I wonder, I was playing, it was standing there in front of me, and when I let up on the fiddle, it just kind of disappeared. I wonder if there's some kind of correlation here between playing the fiddle and that snake coming out of the hole." So he started playing again. Sure enough, as he started to play, that snake came back up out of the hole. He played really hard, and that snake kind of leaned forward toward him. And when he let up on it, that snake kind of rocked back. So he sped it up again, and the snake leaned forward. And then he kind of let up, and the snake rocked back. And he had that snake going forward and back and forward and back. And pretty soon he realized that there was a real correlation between his playing and the snake's behavior. And he was just so thrilled, he just kind of slowed down gradually, watched that snake turn around, go back in the hole. Man, he could hardly believe what had just happened. He took that fiddle and he put it back in the case. And he grabbed it, and he grabbed his books, and he started running down the mountainside. And he went around and around and around, hit the hills, ran right past the school, right down the street. As he's passing John Malk's general store, old Quentin fires another volley at him. "Hey, fiddle boy, where you going?" He said, "Oh, man, something fantastic has happened. I gotta talk to my mama about it. You forget about it, Quentin. I ain't going to talk to you." And he ran down the street, and he got home, and he came busting in the house. His mother said, What are you doing here?" He said, "Mom, I got to tell you about something awesome that's happened." She said, "I asked you a question. What are you doing here? Don't you know you're supposed to be in school?" He said, "Well, yeah, Mom, but you got to understand. This morning, Quentin got all over me and started putting words in Daddy's mouth and trying to talk me out of playing my fiddle again. And I just got so mad, I ran down the street. I just kept on going until I ended up on Rattlesnake Ridge." And she said, "How many times have I told you not to go up on Rattlesnake Ridge?" He said, "But Mama, you don't understand. I don't have to worry about messing with rattlesnakes." "Why not?" She said, "Mama, remember how Daddy used to talk to the birds? I can charm snakes. You should have been there. You should have seen it. This big old fat ugly rattlesnake was looking me right in the eyes, and I can play fast and make it lean forward. And if I let up, it let rock back. And then I had it going forward and back and forward and back. And when I let up on it, he finally just turned around and went right back in his hole." His mother said, "Well, land sakes, ain't that something? I always knew you had it in you, son. I always knew you could do it. I always knew that you were as good a fiddle player as your dad. So you can charm snakes, but I still don't want you back up on Rattlesnake Ridge. You hear me?" Well, Henry could hardly sleep that night. He was just so thrilled about what had happened. Next morning when he left for school, Quentin got on him again. Before you know it, they're eyeball to eyeball in each other's face, and Quentin's running on him real good. And Henry just couldn't wait to unload it on him. He said, "You know what? Guess what I found out yesterday? Why, I couldn't stop to talk to you. Remember how my daddy used to talk with the birds? Well, I found out up on Rattlesnake Ridge, I can charm a snake." He said, "You're right. You can charm snakes. Oh, kid, I know I've been pushing you really hard, but you don't have to start coming up with these fairy tales and stuff." "No, it ain't no fairy tale. I'm serious, man. I charm that snake. You should have seen it." He said, No. "Come, man, listen, come back to earth, kid. You're up there in the clouds. I mean, come on. Just hand me over the fiddle. We'll forget about the whole thing." And he said, "No, I ain't giving you this fiddle. I found out that my daddy trained me, and I'm good. I'm real good." And he said, "Well, then I'll tell you what, fiddle boy, why don't you get one of those snakes and bring it back to me?" He said, "Well, you know what? That's exactly what I'm going to do." He said, you just said, "I'll be back." And he just stormed down the street right past the school again and just started going up there to Rattlesnake Ridge. Meanwhile, old man Silas has been real quiet. He's not a real talkative guy. And he just looks at Quentin and he says, "You know, Quentin, you are an idiot. Putting that kid up to that? I mean, at first you were trying to bring him back to earth. Now what do? You send him back up the mountain. I mean, that kid's going to go up there. He could get really hurt." He said, "Yeah, you don't believe him either. It's got nothing to do with believing him. You're putting the kid in harm's way. I mean, you got to stop doing this." Silas says, "You know what? I hope he gets a rattlesnake and brings it back for you. And it bites you, okay? And if you're depending on me to bring help, don't hold your breath." Meanwhile, Fiddle Boy's on his way up to the top. And when Henry gets up near the top, he's looking for that flat place. And sure enough, there's that big old flat rock. And he leans up against it and just slides down. Pulls out his fiddle, starts playing. Closes his eyes and he just really got into this fiddling. Just fiddling like crazy. When he opened his eyes, he could hardly believe it. There wasn't one. There wasn't two. There were three rattlesnakes this time. Staring him right in the face. All of them straight as an arrow. Standing straight up. He played faster. All three of them leaned forward. Relaxed on it. They started to rock back. Got him going forward and back. Forward and back. Man, he could just, oh, he was just so beside himself. And he decided, he said, let me just slow down a bit. And he noticed that one of them was just a tad slower than the others. And that one was the slowest one getting back to the hole. And so when he saw that, he said, hey, that's my target. So he's got them all going again and just really getting it up there. And then all of a sudden, he slowed it down. And as they slowed down and turned around and went back to their holes, he jumped to his feet, grabbed the one that was the slowest and stepped on it by the head and took out his pocket knife and just whacked the head right off. Then he took the body of the snake and he put it in a croaker sack, slung it over his shoulder, put his fiddle away, grabbed that under his arm and his books, and made his way back down the mountain, headed straight for Quentin. When he gets in front of the store, Quentin says, what you got in the sack? He says, I brought your snake. My snake? Come on, kid. Let me see it. So he opens up the sack and he flings the snake at Quentin. And Quentin, you know, he's got one leg, right? Quentin's up like, whoa, leaning on his crutch and everything to keep from falling over. And he looks and he goes, oh, wait a minute. Look, the head's missing. He said, well, yeah, I cut the head off. I don't want to bring the snake back and have it turn on us down here. So I cut off the head. You didn't. That could be roadkill, man. The car may have run over and taken the head. You expect me to believe you charmed the snake and you bring it down? Like, he said, what do you want me to bring you, a live snake? He said, yeah, bring me a live snake. I said, oh, all right. If that's what you want, then I'll bring you a live snake. Man, he just throws up his hands and says, no place in this, man. He's just stomping down the street, gets home. That night, he decides he's going to go up there on Rattlesnake Ridge. And he says to his mother, he says, Mom, I got a jam with some of the boys. We're practicing for a church. We're going to do a special music at church this weekend. He says, so I'm going to do that, and I'll be back as soon as I can. His mother said, well, all right. Now, Henry, you just be careful. It's dark. It's chilly out there. Just you know what you got to do. He said, yep, I know what I got to do, Mama. And he starts going. When he gets past the general store, Quentin says, where are you going, fiddle boy? He says, hey, what I promise you? I'm going up on the ridge, and I'm bringing you back a live rattlesnake. He says, here's what I want you to do, Quentin. I want you to listen long and hard, because I'm going to play loud up there, and I guarantee you're going to hear me. He said, when that moon comes up on the mountain, you'll know I'm up there and I'm playing, and when the fiddling stops, you know I've got your snake, and I'll be back. And he just tromped on down the street. Silas says, there you go. You did it again. Now you got the kid. He's going to bring you back a live rattlesnake. I mean, it wasn't bad enough he brought you a dead one. Now you want him to tangle with the snake alive and keep it alive and bring it back. Man, I hope that snake gets you good. I'm serious, Quentin. I've had enough of you. If you keep this up, I ain't sitting here to whittle next to you anymore. I'm through. And so Silas and he are bickering, and while they're bickering away, oh boy, Henry is just stomping down the street, absolutely determined, focused on getting that live rattlesnake. He goes around up the hills, keeps going around the mountain until he gets up on the top on the ridge. When he gets up on the ridge, he looks for that flat rock, and he leans up against it. Slides down like he always does and picks out that fiddle and rosins up his bow. Boy, he's going to really go after it this time. He puts that under his chin, puts that fiddle there, and starts going after it. Zoom, zoom, zoom. Man, he's just playing his little heart out. Meanwhile, down at the John Malk's general store, Silas says, you hear that? The boy's playing. Just like he said, moon's up. He's playing that fiddle. Keep listening, because when that music stops, I think that boy means to come back with your snake. He said, yeah, sure, yada, yada. I believe it when I see it. Well, meanwhile, kid's up there, and he's just playing away. I mean, now he's really got motivation, and so he is just really getting into it. And when he opens his eyes, there isn't one, two, or three. There are seven rattlesnakes, all of them standing at attention, waiting for him to play the next note. And he just goes after it. He's playing faster. All seven of them lean forward. And he lexes on the bow, and they just kind of rock back. And he's got them going front and back, front and back. For a minute, he forgets all about getting that live snake for Quentin. He's just having fun with these snakes. And he's just playing away and playing away. Meanwhile, getting down there at the general store, Silas says, boy, that kid's really getting into it. You know, if I didn't know that French was gone, I could almost swear that's French up there playing. I mean, the kid sounds just like his dad. He's got everything down just like his papa. And Quentin says, yeah, I'll admit he sounds a little better tonight, but, you know, he still ain't no match for his old man. Silas says, you ain't got an ear for nothing. That kid's good. He's as good as his old man ever was. And hey, the music stopped. You know what that means, Quentin? He's got your snake, and he's coming to deliver it. Yeah, well, I'll be here waiting for him because I don't really think he's got the goods. You know, I'm just going to sit. Of course, now Quentin's getting a little worried, but he's just sitting there waiting. Half an hour goes by, nothing. Hour goes by. Silas said, surely by now the boy should have been here. Hour and a half, 2 hours, 3 hours go by. Now it's getting really, really late. Quentin says, see, I told you. I told you the boy was faking it. He was just shooting off steam from his mouth, trying to pretend he's as good as his old man. I knew he wasn't going to make it. He's probably out there right now circling behind us in the trees and stuff in the woods, you know, trying to make his way back home so he doesn't have to face us. Silas says, you better hope to God that that boy ain't hurt or in trouble. Because if he is, I'm going to take that crutch of yours. I'm going to beat you senseless. Quentin says, yeah, well, you're going to have to do it tomorrow because I'm sleepy and I'm going home. So Quentin gets up, you know, kind of hobbles over to his pickup, gets in his pickup and drives off. And old man Silas just starts heading down the street back toward his house. In the morning, they're waiting as all the kids are coming by for school. Here they are. All those kids just come filing by like they do every single day. And they kept looking and looking for Henry. But Henry never came by. Silas says, I don't know what you've done now, but it's not good. The boy's not here. He hasn't come by. And Quentin says, that's because he can't do what he said. He couldn't deliver the goods. And he's just trying to avoid us. And he's hoping that it'll all go away now because he doesn't want to face us. So let's just forget about it, and if you see the boy or anything, just tell him I've called off the whole deal and everything's all right, you know. Silas says, yeah, well, that's not good enough for me. The boy hasn't come by, no word, no nothing. I'm going to go by the house. Maybe you're right, maybe he's at the house and he's sulking, but I'm going to go over there and check it out. So old man Silas books it down the street as fast as an old man can book it. Gets to the house and he knocks on the door. Ms. Miller! Hey, Ms. Miller! Miller, it's me. It's old man Silas. Ms. Miller! Circles around toward the back of the house. She's out in the backyard. She's kind of like working in the garden. She looks like a mess. He said, Ms. Miller, what seems to be the trouble? She said, I waited up all night. And Henry never came back. He was gone. He was supposed to go and rehearse with some of the other boys and girls from the church. And they were going to, you know, tune up for a special music this weekend. And they told me he never even got there. And he never came home. And he's never done this to me before. And Silas says, well, maybe there are extenuating circumstances. She said, Silas, do you know something I don't know? He said, well, yeah, kind of. And if you twist my arm just a tad, I guess I'll tell you. She said, well, I'm twisting. You start talking. He said, well, you see, he and Quentin were going at it again. And he told Quentin about his snake charming abilities. And Quentin challenged him to bring a live rattlesnake And that would be the only way to shut him up, and he would just leave the boy alone. And frankly, I'm a little worried myself when he didn't come by last night. And then this morning when I didn't see him coming to school, I figured I better come here and check it out with you. And she said, well, I'm glad you came by. Because he ain't come home. I haven't heard anything, hiding a hair of him, and I don't know where he is. Well, I'll tell you what, Ms. Miller, you just stay right here. Because if the boy is out there in the woods or whatever trying to get home without having to face Quentin, he needs for his mother to be here. You just stay put, and I'll take Quentin. We'll get in his pickup, and we'll head up to the ridge, and we'll start trying to track the boy. When he gets back to the general store, Quentin says, what happened? He says, I'll tell you what happened. The boy never came home last night. Now, you think he's out there hiding in the woods. I'm starting to really get worried here. Now, you get in your pickup, and you take me with you, and let's head up to the ridge, and we need to go check it out. So they got in the pickup, and they started going up. They went up to the hills, and they started going around the mountain. And then they got closer and closer to the top. But you can't quite get all the way to the top in a pickup. You got to go, like, you know, that last couple of 300 feet or so. You got to do it on foot. So they get out, and Quentin, I mean, you know, for all his hobbling and stuff, he's a pretty young guy, so he can do it. So they're climbing up there together. Old man Silas is huffing and puffing, but he's going up with them, and they're looking for the boy. Henry! Henry, where are you, man? Come on, Henry! Henry! Henry, come on. Hey, it's all right, man. It's all right. You know, we understand that we kind of pushed you too far, and you don't have to, you know, you don't have to come up with a snake or nothing. Just tell us you're okay. Your mom is worried, and, you know, between the two of them, they're trying to give him every excuse so he can just come out of hiding. But no Henry. I mean, not a sound, nothing. And they kept going around and around. Come on, Henry. Come on out, man. You got nothing to worry about. It's okay. You know, meanwhile, both of them are starting to get just a little worried. And when they get up near the top, they're on the other side of that flat rock. And they see, sticking out, they see a pair of feet. He said, there he is. We found him. Man, come on, Henry. You got nothing to worry about. And when they came around the side of the rock to the flat side, Henry was face down. His fiddle had been smashed when he fell on it the night before. Just smashed to pieces. And Henry wasn't moving. All right, come on now, Henry. You made your point. You punished us. You just come on, get up now. Come on, Henry. Hey, that's good play acting, isn't it? He ain't moving a muscle. Come on, Henry. Come on, man, move. Move. Henry, hey, Henry, Henry. Silas is just standing there with his hands on his hips. And Quentin, he dropped down on his knees and he started shaking the boy. He said, Henry, come on, Henry. Man, you're sure doing a good job of scaring me, man. Come on. Come on. Hey, Henry. Henry. Henry, oh God, what have I done? What have I done? You know, generations have been trying to outdo each other since the beginning of time. And people keep comparing one generation with the other, driving children all their lives to outdo their moms and dads and the generations before. It always turns out the same. It's always a tragedy. You know, the rule makers are cool. And the best way to deal with rule makers is not to compete with them or to compare yourselves with them, but to remember that two are better than one. Instead of opposing each other and rebelling against them and giving them a hard time and thinking I got to do better than them, we need to join forces. Because two are better than one. And I'll go you one step past that. A strand of three is not easily broken. When Jesus, the rule maker, brings the generations together, there's no need to compete. There's no need to compare. We can be one. And together we can do so much more than any generation can hope to accomplish by itself. Now, the real problem in the story is that in his competition, in his need to prove himself, Henry started messing around with snakes, which, if you recall what we talked about on Monday, the snake is sneaky and deadly. Sin is like a snake. And I know there are some of you here today, I know there are, who have been messing with those snakes, messing around with sins as part of your getting even or striking back or trying to prove something. And now you've got more than one and you're trying to juggle them all, just like Henry thinking he could charm a group of snakes and he had them under control. He didn't have those snakes under control. They were playing with him. He wasn't playing with them. And when Henry just kept fiddling away, those snakes waited for the right moment and they jumped him. And they bit him over and over again. There were over 100 snake bites on Henry's body. And they killed him. Just like those sins you're juggling and playing with, thinking you're getting away with them, thinking you're getting even, thinking you're proving something. Just like those sins are going to turn on you and they're going to kill you, just like those snakes killed Henry. This is not the time to prove anything to anybody. It's time to realize what's really going on and how Jesus is cooler than anyone. And that by bonding yourselves to Christ, not only will you be better than you thought you were, better than anybody thought you were, but you're going to find the best in your parents. You're going to find the best in your teachers. You're going to find the best everywhere. It's time to let Christ bring everybody together. Let's bow our heads. I want to pray with you. Lord, there was a French Miller and there was a Henry Miller. And Henry Miller did try to charm snakes, and he was bitten and poisoned to death by rattlesnakes up on Rattlesnake Ridge. How many there were, we don't know. I just told the story the way it was told to me. But I know that there's a lot of truth in that story. By trying to compare Henry with his dad, they kind of forced that boy to think he had to prove he was better. And in trying to prove he was better, the boy began to mess with the rules. And those snakes, for him, were just like rules for us that we try to break and we start sinning. And sin will kill, just like a rattlesnake. And I'm frightened, Lord. I'm frightened for these wonderful boys and girls, these young men and women, that they're caught up in some of this. And some of them are messing with these snakes thinking they got them under control, but they don't. You don't charm a snake. You fear a snake. You handle it with care. And you don't think that you're playing with it, because if you do, it'll start playing with you, playing with your head, playing with your heart, and messing up your life. Please, show everyone here that through you we can end this nightmare and this nonsense, that we should join forces and work together. Please protect them. Protect them from the snakes they're playing with, thinking they've got them under control. Show them you're the one who has sin under control. And if they'll hook up with you, both parents and children, teachers and students, that we'll form an alliance that will last forever. And all of us can taste the sweet, sweet victory of defeat for the enemy. In Jesus' name we pray. And everybody said, God bless. Thanks for coming, guys.